And welcome everybody to Around the Battleground. My name is LHS and we're finally back. We took a little Christmas break, but now we're here. And today we've got a very special guest, a very close friend of mine, Andy Barlow, better known as Alpha Jackal. How you doing, bud?
Oh, too bad. How yourself, mate?
I'm doing all right. Getting back into the swing of things. Took a nice long break. I pre-recorded like 3 weeks worth of interviews before we went into the holidays, and the only thing we didn't have like a coverage for was for like Christmas, because like a bunch of stuff happened for that last episode. But it's been a long time since I talked about Smite, and we're like really back in the swing thing. So now it feels like gotta knock the rust off. So I thought, who better to knock the rust off with than, you know, the guy that we literally ramble for an hour every time we get together. because we were sitting there before the show. I was like, when was the last time Alpha and I sat down and talked? And it was the placement rounds. And like you pointed out, oh yeah, that was the episode we talked about Nocturnes for forever.
So just to give everybody like a bit of a background, we've been sat here for about 30 minutes waiting to start this, and we've been talking nonstop still.
Yep, it's one of those things that Alpha and I... There's a few people in the community that like I can just sit and talk to, and Alpha's one of those guys that every time it's just something will happen. Like we'll be ready to start, and it's like, oh, then we go on this rabbit hole, and it's like, okay, we gotta go back to start, and then the rabbit hole. Like even in the show, like we'll just like last time, you know, we sat there and talked about Nocturnes for an inordinate amount of time,
and then they come to land and they don't perform as well as I think people like myself expected.
I don't know. I thought they performed pretty well. I think they had made changes from the last time we saw them. I think it was
right. The solo laner was different.
Right.
And that's sort of what threw me off and threw my prediction off. I felt like the solo laner that they had did play well. Just I felt if they had Beltway, it would have been a lot different.
Again, I also think
we're starting to go down the rabbit hole again.
Right, but I mean, this is all good content. Everyone wants to know what we talk, what we think about these other teams. I think the biggest thing going into that LAN is I think people criminally underrated kind of what LG was capable of. A lot of people look at LG in that tournament and were like, kind of look down on what they did, their performance-wise. I mean, they played down to Nocturnes, a lot of people would say. And then after the fact, you kind of hear that, you know, they didn't practice at all leading into Nocturnes. They were focused on Obey, which, you know, I kind of get. But, you know, and then after the fact, you know, behind the scenes, you know, we were hearing that there was no practice time to be had really at the LAN. Like there was a lot of time that was supposed to be allotted that they all got really mucked up. I don't know how much you can kind of speak to that and, you know, confirm that. But it was just it felt like once you got to LAN at that placement stage, it was really weirdly ordered behind the scenes.
What I will say, because I kind of do want to say the entirety of the story, but I know that certain things just wouldn't sit right with higher ups and the admins at higher ups if I, you know, said everything. So what I'll say is that if you had everything was allotted a couple of scrim sessions. Throughout the couple of days beforehand of the tournament. If you were lucky enough to have your scrim session soft booked for the early sessions in the day, like in the very beginning, you were able to then get those scrim sessions ahead and, you know, played. You only had an hour and a half for those scrims. So, you know, if you factor in a lot of setup time, you had to get the servers ready, you had to do picks and bans, you had to get the lobby up and everything, you only really managed to get one, maybe two games in. But as you went on later on in the day, obviously the time you had wasn't really an hour and a half. It got shrunk down to like an hour, maybe even 45 minutes towards the very end of the day, because teams wanted to get their full time's worth.
Yeah, I'm really hoping moving forward, like that's the kind of little things we kind of see change. High-res, we can talk about high-res and like the, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about season 6 and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you were kind of a vocal person going into all of that, so we'll speak to that a little later. But like let's just we'll focus on the placement rounds because that's what we left off last time we spoke. Going back to LG, How would you classify their tournament? Because I know I have my own opinion. Like the popular opinion is that they underperformed as always. They're just a bad team. Do you kind of share that sentiment, or do you you kind of view what they did differently?
I do agree with the fact that they underperformed, but I wouldn't say it's because they're a bad team. You have a look at the players that they have on the squad. Like Vedian, for example, world class player. Just it something behind the scenes wasn't really working for the team, and you could clearly see that that was the case when they were facing up against Armada and they lost to them. An SBL team shouldn't really be losing to an SML team on a tournament stage. If you're talking about scrim sessions beforehand, occasionally that might happen. The SML team just plays lights out, the SBL team plays down to them or something, but in a tournament setting, shouldn't really happen because that's where you bring your A game. So I would agree with the fact that LG did, you know, underperform, but the chances of qualifying from the tournament as a whole were slim to begin with. So to sort of gauge the success just based on that, I say, is really difficult. And I think that the players that were on that squad can rest assured that they will find places in the SPL next season, potentially. I definitely know of a couple of them who do have squads, which I am not going to be leaking. No leaks this time before you can try and worm your way into that.
It's funny you say that, but we interviewed, I won't say who, in the last few weeks, and like in the middle of the conversation, they were just like Terrarian a thought, stream of consciousness, and like leaked two or three of the orgs to me that hadn't been announced. I was like, whoa, we can't air that. So we had to edit out like a portion of the interview because there was some information that didn't need to be released yet. So we'll see. Catch you. This is a
this is a pro high res
show. Yeah. Like, we work very closely with high res. Like, I have a very good relationship with them. So, you know, as soon as that person said it, I was like, you know, there's that A part of me that wants to like capitalize on that. So I was like, hey, I know this hasn't been released yet, but you know, could we break this? They're like, no. And I was like, all right, I figured, but I might as well try. So yeah, we got your back if you do slip up and say anything. We always make sure that we kind of run everything and make it all kosher. The question for you I have for you then is like, how close do you think LG was to beating Obey at LAN at that placement round?
I don't think they were close at all.
Really?
I think given the squads that were there on the day, given how both teams were playing in the lead up to the LAN, if they played that set 100 times, Obey win 99, maybe even 98.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. On a good day, Obey should be beating LG. But LG kind of came in with the perfect strategy to beat Obey and really any EU team. I mean, that like the strategy to beat EU is just run at them early. Right? That's like what NA has historically always done. We talked about that going into placements. Like, we thought, you and I called it, like, that we're going to see like some starts going back to mid. We're going to see all of that high pressure stuff. We're going to see high pressure solo lanes. The Warriors come back to try to all pull that. And like the way that you had worded it was like, that's going to be, you know, the not as good teams leaning on that crutch to try to get that early aggression. But I mean, LG was one mid fight away from really taking that game one away from Obey. And I feel like they kind of set the tone for all of the NA EU matches after that, right? Like, a lot of the NA EU matches had that early aggression. I mean, not to the extent of picking Arachne jungle, right? Which is, you know, where I feel like LG kind of went, they got too lost in the sauce of the strategy. But I feel like if I was trying to game plan LG to beat Obey, I think that's the strategy I go with. The later the game goes. Go ahead.
Yeah, the strategy I would come up with as well would be put Weakon on a god that he's comfortable with in the early game, can play aggressively with, i.e. Arachne was a perfect choice for him. Because he probably does have the best Arachne in the SPL. Definitely in the last season, he had the best Arachne, hands down. And just solo him, right, go pretty prime. He's going to be picking this hyper immobile but hyper damaging mage. If you manage to put him behind, his damage is going to be manageable in the mid game. We can then team fight and we can then win. And then to complement that, you try and put down the person who's there to protect him. Most of the time, that's going to be support Rafa. But a couple of times, it could also be something like a Hombat's Jungle. It could also be the Nike solo. Just somebody there to help heal for the Zeus, somebody there to help him, you know, get even further ahead than he really should be. You can then keep them slightly a bit behind, but still focusing on the Zeus. That's exactly how you would beat Obey.
Yeah. And I think there was only one mid fight where one person was caught out of position against Pretty Prime. They got the kill, and then they had a potential double kill themselves, and they dropped it, and it became a double kill for Obey. And it was around like the 20-minute mark or something like that. It was like, if LG doesn't fall there, I think that game realistically went to LG over Obey. And then game two is probably a different story.
Yeah,
because LG was kind of shook at that point.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that set, but
mm-hmm. It's been a while. That was back in October.
Yeah. Like, if you're asking me about our sets, I remember a lot more about our sets than I do about theirs,
right.
About anybody else's. But I do remember LG having a very good game one, and then game two was just absolutely nothing. Then pretty much the same thing against Armada happened. Game one, you sort of felt that they could do things, but Armada just managed to come back and take the win. Then game two, Armada just win.
Yep. Cope, baby. Finally toppling the mentor. I mean, that was such a good storyline going into that, too. So Armada was one of the big focuses between you and I going into that placement rounds, because you guys had to play them, and you spoke very highly of them, and I didn't really see the hype, right? SML team, we've seen this 1,000 times, you know, they're just gonna come in, they're gonna lose, it's gonna be sort of competitive for the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes maybe, and then, you know, it'll get lost. But Armada came up and they showed up. Did they meet your expectations? Because I mean, you were game planning for them. Did they kind of do what you thought they would do? Did they underperform to you, or did they like show you some things you didn't quite expect from them?
I suppose they performed a bit better than I expected them to do. They almost took a game off us, and realistically, they should have taken game two off us. But thank God that Sobek has his new Order Titan skin that Deathwalker equipped. outside of that, I felt like their performance in the lower bracket was, you know, sort of to be expected. Felt like they came up short the further the tournament went on. It's like they came in with most of their energy trying to get the result against us, and then that energy sort of dissipated as the weekend went on. And you can sort of see in that final set against Insignum that it was a bit, oh god, we really have to play another set today. Whilst Insignum were there, they were ready, they were raring to go for that set, even with, you know, having to play with Cassia as a sub. And that was the big storyline, was Insignum. And I really do want to talk about it. I really do.
You do? You want to talk about Insignum?
Yeah, because it's an EU team that performed extremely well, and I said it at LAN, and I will say it again here. If Genetics was playing that final set against Space Station, we see Insignum go to Worlds.
So I guess we got to highlight the Insignum stuff and what happened with their roster. It was very controversial when it happened. Which camp are you in? That Hi-Rez did the right thing? Or that Hi-Rez overreacted and they should not have competitively banned him at the tournament. I know it's a hard question.
Because, Yeah, because what he did, and he even mentioned, so what he did deserve a competitive ban. I mean, I don't think anybody's questioning the fact that it was worthy of a competitive ban. The question was, did it need to happen there and then in the middle of the tournament, or should it have happened at some point afterwards? I'm sort of in the camp that it should have happened afterwards, mainly for competitive integrity's sake. Because you want to have the best performers possible at the LAN. You want to have the best teams possible. You want to have to make sure they're at their full potential. You want to make sure that it's just the spectacle that the fans want it to be. And if you're crippling a team because they did some, because one of their players did something wrong, and which is perfectly fine to do, you are sort of saying to the league that, the fans that, this game isn't going to be as hyped, it isn't going to be as big as it should be because one team's weakened. Luckily for them, the exact opposite happened.
Yeah, so with that, though, if you wait till after the tournament, they do their run, right, and they qualify, when do you have the competitive event take place? Do you have it take place for Worlds? The next opportunity, does he get the slap? Or does his competitive ban not take hold until Season 6? Like, how would you have approached that then?
I probably would have given him a fine rather than a competitive ban. Because he's sort of there at the tournament already. If it was week 5 of the SML and this story broke, I would have given him that week 6 as a ban. Obviously, because it's not at a LAN, you don't necessarily see that set. Although the majority of players wouldn't see that set. But going into the LAN and being at the LAN, I feel like at that point should have gone down to a fine rather than a competitive ban.
Yeah, it's such a hard question because nobody's arguing what he did was wrong, right? Everybody's just kind of like, all right, the actual doling out of the punishment. Should it have been a fine? That's actually an interesting thing. That's one of the things I don't think I really saw a lot of talk about, was that it being a fine at the tournament rather than being a competitive ban, right? I feel like it still is a punishment. I don't know, how many times have we run into this where a pro player or SML player or like a high profile player does some really stupid thing in game publicly, and then it comes out, right? And then how many times have we seen that result in nothing? A lot. We've seen that happen a lot of times, right? And then I feel like we started off Season 5. I forget what it was. Wasn't there a high profile ban at the start of Season 5 that everybody was kind of up in arms about? Was it
not that I can remember?
There was something with Maddie Pocket, right?
Oh yeah. Where okay, so yeah, this whole thing with that was Mythic were going to be going into coming into the SPL as one of those partner organizations, and Rival weren't. Maddie Pocket DM'd me before Worlds, before the free agency period opened up, which, according to the rules set up by Hi-Rez, was not allowed. And I sort of shared that DM with a friend in good faith. Sort of said, look, Rival aren't going to be in the SPL next year. Mythic are. This is what Maddie Pocket sent me. What do you think? Should we really be entertaining them for an offer? Should we just completely ignore them? Should we go for something else completely? And I've trusted him before, because back when we were Cyclone, I sort of did the same thing with Rival, and nothing came out into the public sides about that until Rival announced that they had signed us. What happened this time was he then shared it with somebody else, who then shared it with DM Brandon. Then DM Brandon read out the entirety of the thing on stream. It obviously went public. People went fucking ballistic at the fact that Rival weren't in, but Mythic, who are a small stream team in Counter-Strike Global Offensive, were in the SPL. And they were particularly angry at the fact that Maddie Pocket was the person who was the contact. I'm not sure why most people were, but I know a small section of people were sort of annoyed at the fact that it seemed like Taco was using influence to get Matty sort of a position of power in the SPL, which is completely absurd. That did not happen. That was not like a thing at all. But when that sort of became public, when people realized Rival went in, they just went up in arms. And eventually what happened was the league came forward and said, right, Mythic are still going to be allowed in the SPL if they want to be, but they can't sign any of the Rival members and they will be fined for breaching the rules about contacting before the free agency period. And they just said, nope, we're leaving, we're out, and Rival got invited back in.
I forget, like, there was a few things that happened around that time, like the whole Matty Pocket Taco thing, obviously, being like the, you know, the nepotism argument there. I thought there was like a player who was like in a game with Matty or something like that, who was like a high profile player as well, who got reported during stream and then got banned, and everyone was just like, oh, how did this happen? And he's like, well, no, dude, you got like 1,000 reports on your account. Like there was something, right? But even that, we can even go past that because we can't really remember that one. But
I think yeah. The other controversy was it wasn't him, I don't know if this is what you're trying to refer to, but it was I think it was Anatoly who reported this guy. It wasn't playing on stream though, so I don't know if it's the same story that you're thinking of. But yeah, he sort of reported this guy and got him banned. And it turns out the ban was completely unfair and it was like sort of an abuse of power. So we had that sort of power taken away from him after like 3 days on Reddit. And Hinderman had to come in and just explain the whole situation away. That didn't happen at the beginning of the season. That happened midway season.
Maybe. I don't know. There's been so many things. And then, like, but even relatively recently, Dean Brandon got banned for a bit, right? So like there's been this kind of shift. Like, people have been calling for that to happen for a long time. And then now, kind of trying to keep people, like, I feel like Hyrus is trying to, like, do that high-profile thing. We're like, high visibility, warnings, bans, 72 hours, whatever it takes. But, like, hey, we're kind of trying to crack down on people who have a certain role in the community. And it's... I feel like that is kind of what was on display with the whole genetics thing. It's hard for me to say. It sucks that happened to Insignum. They were on a roll. That was a very good team. And then it was marred by his stupid actions. And so if you want a competitive ban, I think you do competitive ban right there. You make him play. You ban him for a game, right? Or something along those lines. If they can move past that game without him, sure. Then he's back the next one. I don't know that you completely ban him from the rest of the tournament. I think that was kind of a little harsh, but like you do. I think what should have happened is the ban and a fine. That's probably, you ban him for one game and you fine him. But then you can come back if you win that next game. You know, and who knows what would have happened if Insignum was allowed to play with a full roster after that. They very well, like you said, could have been going to Worlds, and how does that change the Worlds landscape, right? Like that's a whole other topic, right? So it's interesting to see. I want to see more. I do want to see more of those types of actions, right? Because there's a lot of people in the Smite community who, not even just the pro players, I feel like the pro players have had a lot less drama than what we've seen in the past, right? I mean, there was a time when Mask got competitively banned, right? You know,
yeah.
It's been a while since we've had an SPL level player really do something that stupid. But the SML still kind of has that a little bit. People, the SML players and people trying to get into the SML, it's a lot of young kids. It's a lot of kids doing a lot of stupid stuff. And cracking down on those guys, because they are essentially ambassadors of the game at this point, right? Whether they want to accept that or not. Like, I didn't ask for this. I was like, well, yeah, you, that's not how the world works. You kind of stepped into that role, right? By being who you are. And so it'll be interesting how we see that move forward, especially going into the season 6 stuff. Cause I feel like season 6 is going to be by definition, it has to be a strict year, right? Like there's got to be so much more regulation going on in this next year.
This year, there's so many things which have to go right for it to, you know, be a massive success. And that starts with both the players and hires becoming more mature and open about everything. Because high-res, I think they need to accept the fact that their communication hasn't been the greatest, especially when it comes to, you know, post and pre-season things. Because there's been a lot of talk behind the scenes about, you know, season six changes, you know, what the players want, what the organizations want, the deadlines between information needed to be released and information needed to be given to us as the pro players and the pro coaches. And it's not, you know, something new to say that high-res's communication just hasn't been what it needs to be from a professional organization standpoint. But we as the players also need to accept the fact that we can be more mature about things. We can, you know, approach them in, you know, a respectable manner. We can approach these issues in a way that allows for an open discussion and, you know, progress from there rather than just memeing the shit out of it on Twitter. Because that sort of has been the default thing to do, is there's a change I don't like, let's just meme it till it's dead on Twitter. And that sort of thing, whilst entertaining and whilst gives, you know, a bit more visibility to community as, you know, want to sort of openly jokes about, you know, serious issues, that sort of thing needs to be scaled back and put more into this professional, this is the change, this is why we don't like it, here are some alternatives that we would propose instead. And I do feel like both of those things have started, but it needs to continue more.
Yeah, I think I absolutely agree. One of the biggest things this year has been just that transparency, right? That's something high-res has really stepped away from the last year or so. They play a lot of things close to the vest, only releasing little bits of information. And it hasn't really worked with the community, right? Every time they try to do that, the community's like, no, we need this done with information. Because when you don't give people information, they wildly speculate. And they're going to fill in the blanks themselves based on past actions, based on other factors. And realistically, the Smite community at large, the Reddit, the Twitter, all of that, is a really negative place. And they're going to fill it in with the worst possible iteration. So why would you give them that ability to, instead of just saying, laying it all out? I think and I hope that the changes for season six and them releasing that video from Todd Harris about all of the changes that, like, they laid out all of the housing stuff, they laid out all of their plans, right? All of the monetary side of things. They were really, really transparent in that video they released. I want more of that going forward in season six. I want more of being open and how things are going to be working, right? Being able to share a bunch of information candidly with your community when you have all this league operation stuff, I feel like it's really important. And it's, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's something that, you know, we have spoke a lot about on this show. And what I have said across every platform that I've had is Smite needs that maturation, both from the players, the community, and it's kind of league ops, right? It wants to kind of grow into that league, right? The League of Legends setting. But with that, there needs to be that growing up. And we're slowly seeing that. We're seeing teams get managers and all of these orgs kind of handling a lot more of announcements and stuff like that than we used to. I mean, I don't think right now we could ever again have a weekend in con incident just because of how everything is set up. You know, you remember when weekend kicked in con off the ALG, the entire community burned down for like a month. Like, it got to the point, like, I will never forget it because it was the stupidest thing in the world. The weekend in con, like, schism in the community went so far down, like where it penetrated into the community. At one point, DM Brandon was like in a feud with Duke Sloth, the in-con weekend thing is what started. And I was like, how did we get here? How did this happen? What is going on? And it was like a huge thing. I'll never forget it because it was so dumb.
The biggest thing I remember from that was the fact that Incon got like 1,000 subs or something just from one stream afterwards. Like, that's absolutely insane.
And that was my transition period, I feel like, too. Because I was like, at the start of that, I was like, your typical idiot Reddit smite person, right? Oh, Incon can do no wrong. Weakens an asshole. Blah, blah, blah. And then I had my show at that time, and we brought Weaken in, and we talked to him. And it was just like, oh, everyone who's saying Weaken's an asshole is kind of, like, wrong. Like, don't get me wrong. Weaken's a crass dude. Weaken's a little rough around the edges. But at the end of the day, he's just like he's a good dude making good business moves, right? He's like, I want to win. We can't win with him. And there's nothing that's as far as that goes, right? And that's one of the things I kind of always like, what I learned out of that is like, at the end of the day, I'd rather have a person like Weaken who's going to say something to my face than some of these people in the community who are going to like talk about it for forever behind your back, you know? I don't know. That was my biggest takeaway from that big Incon versus Weaken debacle. But now,
it's not to say that Incon couldn't win at all. It's just that he said that he couldn't win with that squad. And that's sometimes the fairest assessment that you can actually just give of somebody, is the fact that you don't work well with this squad. You'll probably work well on a different squad. Like, just go talk to these players. You'll probably work extremely well with them. And, you know, you can give us a run for our money at Worlds, sort of thing. And on the face of it, what happened was, you know, extremely what the fuck just happened. But at the end of the day, like you said, it was purely a business move, and it's something that I think both parties benefited from massively.
Yeah, and now that's something that won't happen. Like, at the time, I remember advocating, like, we need more team structure. The SPL, Smite as a whole, has been so player driven for so long that we need something to come along that changes that dynamic, right? We need the orgs to kind of come in. We need that team aspect to come in and be like, okay, the manager, the org is going to make these announcements, the player roster changes, there's going to be a whole thing about it, and it's going to be taken out of the players' hands to make those announcements, because when you put it in the players' hands, there's a lot of room for that to go wrong. And I think Smite is kind of caught in the middle right now of making that jump, and it's why I think we'll go ahead and we're going to jump, I mean, we're going to use this, I guess we're going to talk, jump right into the Season 6 stuff, but we're transitioning right now away from the player-focused league to more of the league focused league, like the orgs, the teams, and everything like that. And I feel like it's a weird spot, because a lot of players are having a somewhat difficult time adjusting to that. And, you know, both sides are, it's the growing pains of that. Like, Hi-Rez isn't exactly doing it the best way. They could obviously do things a little bit better, but the players as well also aren't handling it the right way. I mean, I kind of know a little bit more than the people watching this do, but you know, there were players swearing up and down that they will not be playing in the SPL. They hated all the Season 6 changes, and we will absolutely be seeing those players in the SPL come, you know, in a couple weeks. And like that is so disingenuous to me. Like, one of the things that you hit on the head is like, the community, the players need to do a better job about, instead of memeing the shit out of something on Twitter and Reddit, actually just like doing something, right? And I don't know, like, what were your thoughts? Let's this is the good and the bad going into Season 6. Obviously, you know, you as an EU player and as a coach, there's a lot that kind of was negative going in. Like, you guys had obviously talked with Hi-Rez about this, and you know, let me just get your thoughts. I mean, this is a safe space for you, AJ. You can let it all air.
So before I get into like my thoughts, what I will say is that whilst publicly facing a lot of the players that, you know, said they wouldn't play but are playing, went ahead and did, you know, say just that and went, oh, this is complete utter trash, I'm not going to be playing ever again, goodbye, goodbye, and then turns out they are playing. We sort of did, you know, as the pro player base organize and, you know, almost, like, with, you could sort of say it's unionized, but it's sort of not, because we're, like, we're not under, like, one banner, like, we're just sort of, like, there as one unit talking to higher res rather than having 50 of us bombard them with questions, which are pretty much the same thing. That one of us just talking to them on everyone else's behalf. Everyone was there, pretty much. And so it's a discussion between us and League Operation Managers at Hi-Rez. We had a couple of those meetings. We had a couple of discussions, and, you know, there were compromises made on both ends. And because of that, Season 6 changes have been a lot more, you know, positively looked at by the players which are staying on that originally weren't. Because some of those things that they sort of wanted answers on and wanted clarification on did come back, did come through, and they were clarified, there were changes made. One of the big things was the fact that organizations before were allowed to have 2-year contracts, which from a player standpoint could completely screw you over, because you're tied to them for a second year when you want to, you know, I don't know, change teams, you want to make sure that you have that option to move on after this season. And after talking about it with Hi-Rez, that changed. Teams can only sign on to a 1-year contract now, which is perfect. And it sort of did seem odd that you could have 2-year contracts, given that you didn't know if the organization itself was going to be in the next year or not, because, mm-hmm. you know, as we've seen this year, some organizations did drop out and some did come in. But back to your original question about the fact, what do I felt about the Season 6 changes? I was a big proponent against them, I will admit. To begin with, I felt like these sort of changes were going to kill sort of like the European scene. They were going to make sure that if you were an aspiring player outside of North America, you had very little chance of getting into the Pro League. It's either be North American, get into the Pro League, or your best bet is the minor league and in pretty much everywhere else. And I felt like it was going against that sort of player-centric focus that we've been building up over the past, 8-9 years of the games being released. It sort of just felt like a slight betrayal, because everything was focused on, right, the orgs come first, then the players, rather than it's the players first and then the organizations. But again, after having talks with Hi-Rez, after, you know, having those meetings, it's clear that they want to try and give the best experience possible for both parties. Want to try and make sure that everyone moves forward as, you know, one community, as one cohesive unit, rather than just having little factions going on of, here's the players, they hate the orgs, they hate the management, here's the management, they hate everybody else as well. They're going to just have loads of infighting for the next year. It's going to be terrible. But I don't know. To begin with, I was not excited for the Season 6 changes. Now that I've seen who's playing, now that I know most of the rosters, all the organizations going forward, I am excited for it. You know, it can work. I am, you know, sad that some players had to leave, but at the end of the day, this is no longer you get to play a game for money. This is your job. And I think that's a big transition that needed to be made, was the fact that this is now a job. We need to treat it like a job.
I absolutely don't disagree with that. I think that's the big change. It's like, this is a real job. And it's, you know, kind of reconciling that like idea of like, oh, this was just kind of something I did in the short term, in the interim, before finding like my real thing. And then this is, you know, if you believe in this, this is absolutely going to stick around. And it's, you know, having to reconcile that, like, do I believe Smite is going to stick around versus, you know, do I think I have a better shot somewhere else? We've seen players like Cope, right? He's like, I have a good career lined up. I have all of this opportunity in, you know, my personal life and all this, and my professional life away from Smite, that I think is going to pan out a lot better in the long run than anything that Smite's going to be able to provide for me. And that's a really hard conversation. And it's one of those things where a lot of the people in the scene are young, right? And so having to have that difficult conversation with yourself and, you know, having uncomfortable moments when you're thinking about stuff like that is hard sometimes. So I understand why a lot of like vitriol and like negativity was being thrown out, because it's uncomfortable. It's all this anxiety, right? But I feel like now that the dust has settled, now that it was more communication, now that there's like the people who are believing that this is going to be a thing are staying, and everybody's had that kind of opportunity to really have those conversations with themselves, we're seeing the belief in Smite. We're seeing all these people kind of come about the other side of like, okay, I understand. I see the changes that are happening, and I kind of you just have a better understanding. And so this is going to be a really interesting year. I think, yeah, you said it earlier, there's so many things that have to go right this year. Then there's going to be a lot of changes that need to happen on both sides. Hi-Rez has a lot of opportunity using their Skillshot division for this. There's a lot of opportunity for content. And we need to see stuff that, like what happens at, you know, HRX and all that, not happen again. You know, scheduling people for content and then nobody showing up from Skillshot. It never needs to happen again, right? There's all of that kind of stuff that behind the scenes, dropping the ball, just can't happen. This year really needs to be frame perfect. There's no other way to like really put it. Like, there's so much opportunity that if we don't capitalize on it correctly this year, it's really just a huge missed opportunity. There's so much room for growth going out of season six. And I really want to believe. I mean, we had a weekend on here a few weeks ago, and like that, as we talked about, could you imagine if the Smite community, instead of being so negative, we just for like a month were positive and we all thought the best things could happen instead of the worst? How much better off could we be if we just put that positive step forward, instead of always kind of being like, how are they going to fuck it up? How is this going to go wrong? You know what I mean?
What I will say is, I think that this season six is sort of like a continuation of the springboarding of season five. And season five was a big change in terms of changing the league to a more professional system. Season six is going to continue that, and it's basically going to showcase to the largest orgs out there. Because let's be real, most of the orgs that are in Smite right now aren't the biggest orgs. They're not like your Evil Geniuses, not your FaZe Clan, not your Optic Gaming, they're not Fnatic, they're not these million upon millions of followers organizations. They are, most of them are household names, you know, and we do have some of our own homegrown ones like Rival and Space Station. But this season is going to show to those massive organizations that pull in millions of dollars each month, this is what Smite can do. This is the sort of content that you can expect. This is, you know, how we will operate. Are you interested or not? And if it works out well, you might see Fnatic, you know, turn around and say, actually, I kind of want to get involved in that again. Or you might see, you know, new teams like Optic or FaZe Clan go, maybe it is time to expand into a MOBA. You know, Smite has that potential to attract pretty much every single organization out there, because it is in between that sort of action game and MOBA genre. It is in a unique space, and if it can be advertised correctly, the sky is the limit. And this season is the season to prove that from Hi-Rez to the larger organizations out there.
This is like season three was such a crucible year for Smite, right? It was a down year. Kind of everybody kind of had questions of where Smite was going. It felt like the steam had kind of ran out, and then Worlds happened. And it was just like, oh, Smite can be really, really awesome and can be one of those pinnacle esports. We have that in us. And, you know, we had Julian on talking about that, you know, last week, week before, and like how crucial orgs like Rival, Obey, NRG, word of that time. I don't think there are any orgs more tied to the last 2 years of Smite than I think really Obey and NRG, right? You guys are right there. Like, well, you guys, Rival was right there too. Dignitas kind of as well. But like, season three worlds is such a crucible moment that make or break for Smite. And like, that's when I think of the highest level of Smite, in esports, I will always think about being there for worlds and hearing the entire crowd do the Obey Olay chant, right? Like that was my moment.
I wasn't there for that world, so like I was at home watching, but I sort of agree in that sentiment is about that I was watching those grand finals, so oh my lord, Smite is fantastic and great again. And yeah. I will always remember Variety playing Thanatos and single-handedly carrying Obey for like two games, getting them like win in one of them. And I will always think, damn, I like Smite.
Yeah, it was my first year into Smite. That was my first year like kind of weighing esports as like an option, and that was just like, oh yeah, that's what I want to do. That this is what I want to be a part of. That was the make that I have such a tie to that because that was like the vindication, the validation of like, yes, this is everything. This is amazing. And now moving forward, like it's I feel like season six is like going to be one of those years. Like there's so much change, you know, Worlds was pretty awesome and all of these changes kind of moving forward. What do we do now? Where do we go from here? And there's so much opportunity going forward that it really can be a banner year showcasing everything. Going into it, this little off season has been weird. There's been ups and downs. You know, usually after HRX, usually after Worlds, like the goodwill and the good feelings are at an all time high, and that usually coasts until the season starts. But then we kind of crash right after with season six announcement, right? And how badly it was handled. And I don't feel like we've really gone back. I don't feel like we've built ourselves back up to where, you know, we usually are at this point in the year. Like we're riding pretty high still. Everyone's kind of like high fiving. High res is just like feeling pretty good. But this year it's like we kind of went halfway back up. And it's like, all right, well, I'm kind of excited for season six, like changes and balance and all that. But, you know, I'm not really super hyped yet about what, you know, SPL is going to be like. And it's such a weird place to be in right now, I feel like.
I think what's sort of carrying over most of the hype is the release of King Arthur and Merlin. Those are big pivotal figures, and the King Arthur reveal, when they showcased all his abilities, he looks cool as fuck, and I want to play him a lot.
Yeah, I agree. Like I'm excited for Arthur, and I'm excited for what Arthur and Merlin mean. Right? We've kind of seen high res Titan Forge games, is that what they are? We've seen them kind of move towards like we're swinging for the fences. We're bringing in fan favorites. We saw that with Hera, right? Hera's been a figure that we've wanted in the game for a long time. We finally got her, so that was really cool. And then, kind of, I think something we've all kind of talked about, you know, wanting is some interesting figures coming in. We kind of were pigeonholed for a long time with mythology, right? And going explicitly by, you know, raw, like that tier of mythology and gods, right? And we've kind of seen that slowly, you know, Medusa, not a god, but very much a part of mythology. And now we're seeing, you know, with Merlin and Arthur, not, you know, a very different type of mythos. Like, what is it? What are they calling it? The mythos? Starts with a C. I can't think of it. Why am I blanking?
I can't think of it, though.
What is the world that they're a part of? I have to Google it. This is going to drive me nuts. King Arthur. universe. Camelot, the Camelot mythos, right? Like this weird thing that is kind of tied to Great Britain, right? But like also kind of just like a very big fictional universe, right? So it has like this whole weird thing. And where do we go from here? What else can we fit in that slot, right? My favorite idea is if we're getting into like, so this is folklore, right? This is what that means, right? Folklore is mythos. So does that mean we're going to get like Paul Bunyan or Johnny Appleseed? Like those like folklore figures from different regions. That would be really cool to me, right? Like you get all of those things, like regional folklore that isn't quite gods and goddesses, but then you get more of the Medusa, the creatures, the things like that. I think that what this could mean for the game and character-wise is monumental. And I really hope we can see some really cool shit come out of this like pivot for design changes. I'm really excited for Merlin because I don't understand how Merlin's going to work.
I don't know. Apparently no one's guessed how his stance switching works, and people have guessed all sorts of things. I'm like, so how does it work then? Does it go on like his last item bought? He changes stance or something?
Like, no,
does he have to exit the mountain in certain ways to change stance? Goes into tower range or something? What? Hello?
Yeah, I'm excited. Going into like Baron Somedy, right? Like the Smite design has been like on point for like the last few releases. Like as a guy, you and I kind of have similar things where we like to push the like what the idea of like a god or a role could do. So having like Baron Somedy, a mage, be very viable as the tank, right? As a support or a solo, that's really cool to me. Having god, like having characters and roles that don't necessarily match what they are classed as is like something I really like, and I want to see more of that. Like the more I think we kind of saw some of that at Worlds, right? We saw the Fenrir support come out. We saw things like that where we're experimenting. Ever since Worlds with Fenrir support, I've been like, what else can I throw in a support role that doesn't necessarily belong there, right? My favorite one so far is Apoir support, and it's just stupid, and I love it every second of it.
I'm not sold on that one.
It's a pub stomper for sure.
100%. I think most of the janky supports you see are going to be pub stompy supports. I mean, even Fenrir to a certain extent is a pub stompy support, because if you know how to play against him well, you can sort of stifle his ability to snowball the game. If you don't know how to play against him, you're going to be pressing that F6 button and probably breaking it within 10 minutes. Then you just find out, you just play, you know, like casuals with friends, and you go, you know what, I'm going to play a Wheelix support. You know, fuck it, I'm gonna try it one game. Then it works, and I go, should we try that again? Hello?
So, you brought up a Wheelix. I have something very serious to ask you. Why did everyone forget a Wheelix existed when we were getting a ton of Odin Fenrir? Like, why did it take so long for a Wheelix to come out after those two gods were getting picked all the time?
I couldn't give you an answer right now without me look back at the game. but my best guess is that everybody was focused on the hype around Mercuria, Long Shen. Freya was extremely powerful as well. Whilst the Wheelix does have a good early game, her late game is not that great. And if you're going against gods like, you know, like Fenrir, like Odin, like Freya, and Mercury and Long Shen, you're just not going to survive in that late game, because it takes you too long to jump away from the action. You sort of have to be in everybody's faces to do the damage, and you can't get out yourself. She just wasn't safe enough to really work out, unless she was like the ultimate pick in that scenario.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is the year that finally broke the Smite pick bans stuff? Because like for a long time, it's always been, you know, traditional picks, right? Whatever. Like the experimentation as far as like what works in competitive has been very narrow, and like that's like a criticism we've always had. But then at like, so the start of the year we were seeing like Sirkette support, and at the end of the year we're seeing the Fenrir support and stuff like that. Do you think we're finally going to get to this point in season 6 where everyone's gonna be like, hey, maybe tunnel visioning isn't the way to go, and we should really expand more on these crazy pick ideas? Or is that like already happening behind the scenes in scrims, and people like me who are talking heads are just an idiot?
It's already been happening behind the scrims for about 8 months now, I think. It has been happening for. But it takes a while to get a pick from, oh, this is just, you know, jank to counter this meta right now, to actually, no, this is the new meta. And that takes time. That takes, you know, it takes a lot of testing as well, because a lot of the time you pick something, say, for example, the Fenris support, you know, that could have been experimented on back in April, and people would not have liked it that much, because it might be good into certain matchups, but then you pick something like Ares or Terra or even like an Odin, it's just like, oh, it's no longer that good, so we'll look for something else. But then you go over to the full split, and then you practice it again. You go, okay, with this sort of thing, we can make it work even better. You know, maybe we ban out these sort of things, we can make it work even more. And then eventually you get to the point where you're practicing it against everything to just try and find its limit, and then you find out, well, its limit is its own limit. But it does take a long time for something to become meta, and it takes a lot of conviction to go, no, what we are doing is correct, and what we are doing is going to be the meta.
I personally draw a lot of similarities between Season 5 and Season 3, because I feel like the end of the year for both the seasons were very, very similar, where Season 3, the meta was the meta, and that's all you did. And it was the same gods, and that's how the game was played. There was no other better way to do it. And then end of the year comes around, bam, new meta on the spot that's blowing everything away, and everybody has to play that way, right? And it's like the out of left field is what takes over everything, and nobody can adapt until they did, and they just did it better than, you know, Eager, who was starting everything. And then Season 5, kind of the same thing. Towards the end of the year, it was the same picks, the same play style, everything was the same. We get to the end of the year, and then the new play style comes out that's blowing everything else out of the water. And that's kind of where I'm like, is this the year where we're like, hey, let's just not stay stagnant anymore? Because I feel like, you know, I've talked to a few EU people who are like very self-aware of it. Like, yeah, EU kind of tends to like find their four picks for a role and stick with it. And that's that these are the absolute best. There's nothing else that could beat them. So we're just going to do that. Right. And I don't know how much you agree with that. But like, based off of that, do you think we'll see more just variation for Season 6, or is it kind of like old habits die hard?
I think you're gonna see a lot of what you will see is you'll have top two or three picks in each role, and you know, teams will generally try and get as many of those as possible, but towards the end of the picks and bans in each game, you'll start seeing a lot more variation. You'll start seeing, you know, a lot more gods get picked, because if you have a look at the trends from season to season, the amount of gods available versus the amount of gods picked has been getting closer and closer to 100%. And this next year, I believe it's going to continue again. And, you know, by the time season 8 rolls around, it could be very well at that 100% roll if they rework Loki.
I don't know how much you follow other scenes, right? But you know, comparatively, Smite's still young, still feeling itself out, hasn't really had the time that other scenes have. But you look at, like, League of Legends, and they do some really jank stuff. Like, we always make fun of, like, places like Southeast Asia or OCE and stuff like that about how they play Smite very differently. But you look at places like League of Legends where every region kind of has its own unique play style. I mean, we kind of have that within in EU. But they're like, one of the things that I've like latched onto is like the idea of like League of Legends does some like really extreme stuff. Like 10 minutes into the game, they have people switching lanes and roles and everything like that, right? To really capitalize on stuff and like really some in-depth strategies. And like it reminds me more of traditional sports where it's like, you know, you go to back and forth and it's like, all right, we're like soccer, we're going to use this shape. And then we're going to use this shape to counter like them trying to defend us or something like that, right? Like you have all of this counterplay that goes down to like really positioning. Do you think that is something we'll ever see in Smite? Does it just not translate because of the games? Or is it something that like we just haven't really explored because of like the youth of the game and kind of stuff like that.
I think it's a mix of all three. Right now, it's too easy to just have the fed person still stay in their lane and rotate to the fights because of how small the map is. You just make sure that the fights are forced in mid lane rather than on the side lanes, and then all of a sudden the ADC or the solo laner, whoever's the fed one, because the meta dictates that they're fed, is they're going to rotate in and clean up the fight. Because that's just how it works. So if the map was big enough to the point where rotations would be disadvantageous, even if you were ahead, that's when you would sort of see, right, our ADC is three levels ahead, let's have me lane swap with him, so we can then do fights in mid lane and then start taking objectives because we then have the fed person in mid lane, rather than just locked in farming over on the other side. I'll just sit on the tower, I'll farm up because him rotating is just going to mean that I get free farm and you know, I'll then get ahead of him. There was sort of a small experiment about that going into the beginning of Season 5 with the changes to the map size, but in the end it was just showing that, you know, rotating was still just too easy to do. I mean, you had to look at Worlds this year, and it was just, you know, 9 minutes in, you see ADCs rotating to the mid lane fights, you see solo laners rotating all the way over to the dual lane at 3 minutes in, because they could do that because of the relics available, because of the fact that the map isn't as big as people thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that is a very big point. Does Smite have the smallest map out of all of the, like, all the other MOBAs, the big ones? It's got to be, right?
Yeah.
I don't know, do you think Smite could, like, the game itself, like, the mechanics and fundamentals of the game, could it support a map the size of either Dota or League? Or does that fundamentally not kind of work with how the game is supposed to be played?
I don't think it works with the game the way it's meant to be played, because the fact that you have that third-person perspective, you almost want to have action consistently. You almost want to be like, right, I'm going to fight these people, and then I'm going to go fight this NPC, then I'm going to fight this guy, and then I'm going to go over here and, you know, join in here, and then I'm going to back, you know, take a bit of time off, you know, cool down a bit, then go back into the fight, and I'm going to want to, you know, just be enticed and be engaged in the entirety of the game. And if you're spending a minute rotating from base to tower and then another minute rotating from tower to the mid lane, that's not going to be fun. That's not going to be really that engaging to the people that play this game because of its action aspect. It's going to slow the pace of the game down massively, and that's not what Smite's designed to be. Smite's designed to be a fast-paced MOBA. It's designed to be this almost like a brawl, for instance, during the mid game and late game. And you say, right, the map is now 200% bigger. That's taking away that ideal.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting concept. And I would love to, like, because I'm sure the devs have playtested that. Like, what's the biggest we can make the map and still have it be viable? And like you say, like, you know, we're looking at the casual player base, you know, who want all the action. You know, you still got Arena. You still got Clash. Small and close encounter maps. Maybe you make Clash a little bit bigger. But I think there's something to be said about trying to make Conquest bigger, right? And slowing it down, because slowing it down a little bit, right? Spacing it out, giving the making the jungler actually just dedicated in the jungler, and then only like finding time to gank when he's coming through, like going from one camp to the others, or you know, you are exchanging gank for farm, like that you are going to lose farm in the jungle to make those ganks. And that's like something that's not really as punished right now. Like the jungler spends just as much time in mid lane taking waves as he does getting camps in the jungle, right? Like it's too easy and there's not enough in the jungle. I don't know. I think it'd be a really interesting thing to see if Smite was just like, you know what? Well, our map has been too small. And maybe do like a classic Smite Conquest versus, you know, new and enhanced Conquest. But, you know, I'll pipe dream, right? Like we'll never actually see something like that. So it's just like a thought experiment at this point. But all right, where were we? We kind of went off the rails a little bit on that. Rival. Let's talk about Rival. You guys made it to Worlds again, made it to Finals of Worlds again, and got second again. How is this year different than last year? Like, whether thoughts going in, feelings during, Whatever you got for me.
Feeling going in was the exact same with the fact that we felt we were the stronger team going in. And I believe at the beginning of the sets between the United set and between the Spice set, you showed that, like, we showed that this year was different. That, you know, we had a good understanding of what the meta was. We had a good understanding of how to play the game, you know, against Splice. And I think game one and the first 10 minutes of game two showcased that we were there to be the world champions. So we, through those select bits of play, deserve to be world champions. But in terms of feelings during the set and after the set, we felt like for the EU United set, we just didn't suit the meta at all at Worlds. The meta suited EU United quite heavily, and, you know, we just didn't fit to it that well. We tried to adapt, we tried to get our heads around it, but at the end of the day, we just couldn't quite figure it out as well as EU United did. And we just had... That was our first experience of, like, a big, massive LAN event like Worlds, so... All of us got incredibly sick, and we weren't able to communicate during the games. So it was very difficult to actually formulate plans and, you know, make adjustments mid game. So it was difficult for us in the United set. But this one, we felt like, rather than it being outside factors that were beyond our control, that we were the ones that made the mistakes that cost us the world championship. Game two, we had a good lead against them. Zanusha was down 3 levels on his Nasha. We were up about 4-5k gold in 10 minutes. And we decided to just dive mid-tower a couple times. They then get back into the game, and they then take over it because Geb allows them to survive and dive in deeper into the fight than we can. Game 3, we tried adjusting by banning out the Geb, but then we didn't stick to the same game plan. A Splice then ran through us in that game 3. Game 4, we managed to figure out, you know, sort of a counter strategy to them and executed it well enough to win. Well, even though at the beginning of the game we sort of failed a bit. And then game 5, we kind of did drop the ball on drafting a bit.
I'll stop you right there, because you were very public in your disappointment in yourself and everything like that. And I get it. We talked to Kabam right afterwards, and he was like, he spoke very highly of you. Like, that was the hardest thing he's done, trying to go up against you. And then he was like, you know, like, I saw how he felt, you know, going in, and maybe, yeah, you know, pick bans for that last game weren't really great, but I understand what he was trying to do. And the only way that I can really think to say, like, what happened is that Alpha Jackal galaxy brained himself into the wrong pick, where he overanalyzed and overthought, and that's what kind of led us to do it. I was like, that's realistically, I think the perfect thing to say is that you just galaxy brained yourself. You got too lost in, like, all the numbers and picks that were available to you, and you're like, I got it. Fuck, I don't got it. You know, like, it was very one of those things where it was like, you thought, I could see it in your head, like, we can do this. And then you kind of missed the thing right in front of you. And even with that, you guys had a hell of a run. And there's a lot to be said what you guys did. And there's a lot to be said for how critical you were of yourself, right? That shows the drive, the ambition, the passion, like the strive for excellence. But I don't think you can realistically put that on any one person or blame yourself or anything like that. And I just wanted to give you a hug when you were going on that tirade on Twitter, dude. Like, it was like, no, Jackal, no, stop. It's okay. It'll be okay.
It just felt like for the first time in, you know, in 2 years of doing it, that, you know, I completely screwed up, and, you know, this was the guy's opportunity to win Worlds. This was the guy's opportunity to actually win the tournament in front of a crowd, and I sort of blew it for them, and it was also sort of like this thought going through my mind that was probably the last opportunity I would have to win Worlds because of the season 6 changes going through. know, I had no idea if the team was going to stick together. I had no idea if I was going to end up on a new team or not. And even if I did, I don't know if there was going to be an opportunity to get to that stage again. And we, at that game five, after the picks and bans were done, we were still feeling quite good about it. We were still feeling like we could, you know, take the game and still win it. And, you know, at the time, we still felt like we had the better draft than them. Yes, they had, you know, insane amount of gods in like Terra, Arpwash, Freya, Mercury, and Fenrir. But to the same point, in the previous game, Fenrir and Arpwash just didn't really do anything. In the previous game, previous set, like during the set in entirety, Mercury was a non-factor. Freya was only really the biggest issue from that. And then the Terra could have been as well, but again, we sort of played around it quite well in the set, in the games that we did let it through. So going into that game, we did feel like it was winnable. It was something that we could do, but then during the game, it just all fell apart. Like, we got killed a couple times. We just lost and gave up a couple of free Gold Furies. By the time we were able to actually go ahead and fight properly, we were already 6-7k behind. And when they have the squad that they did, and when they have the picks that they did, it's impossible to fight into it.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you look at the draft, and I think a lot of people a lot of the casual people look at this and be like, how can you ever think that you had the upper hand in that draft, right? Like, they had, look at all the picks they had. But, like, it's all contextual, too. I mean, you look at, Freya isn't always as busted as you think. You look at what Nate, one of the best ADCs we got, consistent as all hell. What did he ever really do on the Freya when he got the pick in his hands? He didn't do a whole lot. It was one of those things where it was like, oh, we have to pick Freya because it's open, but didn't really do a whole lot, was really kept in check and, well, managed. And so, okay, we can do that again. You guys can do that. Easy peasy. Okay, they got Opwash. We zone him out. Like, we can really feel like we can do that. There's all these little things that kind of go in, like, the matchups can favor you as long as you can pick like that. And I don't know. Like, I'm kind of defending you already because I can see people like looking at what you're saying. Like, there's no, how could you ever feel like you could beat that comp? It's like, well, no, I can see it. I can see being in your same shoes and be like, okay, rationalizing. If you look at like what won games with the majority of that set, it wasn't really the Opwash. It was the Raijin. You know, the Raijin was doing a hell of a lot more work in that set then the Opwash was a lot of the time. So I saw the thought process there. I saw, you know, you guys picking, you know, not prioritizing, you know, the Frey and all that. Like, it makes sense. And I think a lot of people kind of get lost in like the whole
the Frey are something that we did want, but obviously it being open, it was first pick for them. And that was sort of the thing that was still up in the air, was whether they would first pick the Shibalanki or the Freya. And, you know, as you saw on Twitter, in hindsight, we definitely didn't need to top two the Shibalanki. We could have picked it at some other point. But outside of that, if we were to do the exact same draft again, we may have picked up something different for first pick Shibalanki third, maybe pick Jingwei because of the way the compositions were working out at the time. But again, it's very difficult to say what we would have done differently because in that exact scenario on that day, those picks were doing this well, these picks are doing this well. So On that day, the Raijin probably was going to be the better pick than the Arpwash. The Terra wasn't exactly doing as much work as it should have done. So we don't have to prioritize it as highly. The Shibalanki was being fantastic. You know, there could be a very slight chance that they could put Freya mid, which I said that wasn't going to be. And then you sort of think at the very end, we don't have really much to deal with the fact that they're just going to grab the tank and then kill them in the combo. So what can we do? What can we pick up to really, you know, survive through that burst? And that's sort of where the Nike pick did come through. Was the fact that, right, if Deathwalker gets his ult off beforehand, or if they don't quite kill him, if he's down to like 10% and then gets his ult off, he has a massive shield to then, you know, get out of the fight and then teleport back in. They've wasted their Fenrir ult, their Opposh ult, probably their Terror ult as well, and we just wasted one ult. And we could then turn around on that fight and take it. Especially with the damage amplification and movement speed bonus coming out from the Nike passive, we can probably turn around and kill the Fenrir when he jumps in because of it. There's a lot that went on with that Nike pick that we felt, you know, could have turned the tide of the game. But as I said, when you get to the teamfight stage and you're 6-7k behind because you're giving up objectives, because the early game didn't go as the way it needed to, you can pick anything. You could have the top 10 picks in the game, and you have the top 5, they have the second top 5, and they'll still win because they're 6-7k ahead. Mm-hmm. That's just how the game works.
Right, and there's a lot to be said for that, the day of meta, right? The land meta that evolves, the in the set meta that evolves from the land meta is a larger thing, right? It's a big deal, and it really, like you said, that day Terra wasn't doing as much and the Raijin was. Like, it really comes down to that set, those players against each other, the strategies that have been formed, and you know what traditionally works well. You can't really bring that in. The sets at LAN very much are in a bubble that normal rules don't quite apply, and it's all it's crazy town. Anything could work and nothing can work, and you know it just happened to be you guys, you know, didn't hit the performance level early game that you kind of wanted to. And so I don't think you can really actively say that any one person lost or that you lost pick bans. You could have done things differently, but you never know what that really would have realistically meant, right? I mean, so I think I just saw you beat yourself up so much after that, and it was just like, come on, AJ. Like, you know, I know that emotions were high, but like, you can't blame yourself like that. Like I said, I just wanted to give you a big old hug. But emotions were running out. Like you said, you didn't know if you would be on a team, if the guys would stick together. You know, a lot of the season 6 stuff kind of going on. So it was a very stressful time, very emotional. And now we know, you know, Rival as an org is sticking around, but Rival as a team, you know, the players that you kind of have grown along with the last couple of years, I think it's public knowledge at this point, that team's not sticking together. How emotional is that for you? I mean, you're kind of like the Papa Duck there, watching all his little boys fly away and go to different teams and everything. Is that an emotional thing for you?
It was, but given the way the season 6 changes were handled and given, you know, sort of the talks I could hear from the players, it's something that I knew was coming before we had that big team talk. And we sort of gave everybody a couple of weeks to, you know, sort of have a think about what they wanted to do, entertain a couple of offers if they, you know, wanted them. And when they came back around after 2 weeks, said, what do we want to do? And after that conversation, we knew that it was time to call it on the team. It was sort of like this back and forth about potentially we could be sticking together for the next year, signing with Rival. We did have an offer from them, and we did have, like, you know, it was a massive offer. Like, it's something which I don't think I can actually say out publicly. Out of all the offers that have been tabled right now in the SPL, this would have been the biggest SPL salary in history. That's how big the offer was. But we decided no. Wolfie really can't commit to the move. Death really wants to be on a different team to sort of experience it with different people. So it is time to call it on, you know, call on this squad, call it on this saga, even if it means calling it without winning a world championship. And it sort of was difficult to finally have that admitted and be out in public, you know, that we weren't going to be together next season, and that, you know, it's potential that I won't even be in the SPL next season, depending on what offers came through. Now that the dust has settled, I think that it's going to be a new dawn for all the players that used to be on Rival, you know. People are going to be on rosters which, you know, they can say that they're much happier with, they could say that, you know, that they feel excited about, but at the end of the day, this first roster was the one that they grew up with, the one that they matured with into the scene, and it's we're going to hold high respect for each other, high regard. We're still going to be, you know, talking to each other a lot about, you know, what could have been, and still going to, you know, try and be as friendly as we can with each other. But at the end of the day, it is time to move on.
behind the scenes within the actual team itself, you know, we've talked to Biggie, we talked about Dignitas, and there was kind of some cracks underneath the surface, you know, some butting of heads. Was that something that was really a thing with Rival, or was, you know, at the end of the day, everybody kind of going their separate ways? Was it really just like, all right, with all this changes, we should just embrace all of this? Like, there's no ill will here. Like, we could have stuck together, but, you know, with Wolfie not being able to commit, like, is it better to go our separate ways? Like what Obey did. If we can't move forward with our same roster without the core of Pretty Prime, Nate, and Twiggy, we might as well just, we don't want to be there. That's that, we want our guys and we want to do that. Is that kind of what happened with you guys? If we couldn't be a team together, we don't want to be a team? Or was, were some people like, you know what, it, we've outgrown this phase, we're just, it's time to move on to other things?
I will say at the heart of it, it was, we kind of did entertain the idea of sticking together, but even if it was possible for Wolfie to commit to the move with this roster, I don't see us being together next season either, because of the roster which Death does find himself on. He was really excited about, really wanted to, you know, experience things with a new roster. He wanted to go ahead and do the same thing with new people, because it's not just a job to him, it's totally a whole experience for him. He wants to see whether the same feelings crop up, whether, you know, things are different with a new team rather than just this one team, whether this was, you know, something special that he wants to come back to and, you know, be a part of for the rest of his life, or whether he finds that, you know, it's sort of similar feelings and he can continue moving on with, you know, the new squad that he finds himself on. So Rival had 15-20% chance of sticking together for season 6. You know, that, and that's at tops.
Okay. Very, it's going to be a very interesting year moving forward. You know, some of these rosters we hear about, kind of crazy, kind of wild. Very interested to see it. We also saw, I don't know, on Twitter, you said you're you were out of the SPL, but then now you're back. You got some other stuff kind of percolating. I have to imagine you were kind of like, you were pretty much approached by everybody at some point who didn't already have a coach they were committed to be like, gauge what your interest was, right?
What I will say is, because to begin with, I was not able to move. I sort of had a talk about it with my fiance, and, you know, there are circumstances where I can move, and that's sort of like what we told people now. But to begin with, we haven't had the conversation at that point, and just wanted to figure things out. We wanted to make sure that we can move forward with our, you know, our lives and our careers here. So to begin with, it was sort of like a no, we can't move out. And because of that, a lot of teams didn't approach me. To begin with, actually, no teams approached me because I was just unable to move. That's how seriously the teams are taking out, they're taking this whole, you know, people have to move out sort of thing. And it took me to contact a couple of people on a couple of different rosters for us to, like, for me to actually start getting, you know, somewhere with why, you know, there wasn't any offers coming my way, whether it'll be like a chance for me to do it remotely. And in the end, Heroes of the Storm actually, you know, went away because they're no longer entertaining their pro scene. They're just cutting all ties with that. They're going to start scaling back development on the game as well. And that sort of brought back a couple of players who were thinking of making the switch over to that game. And
really?
Bringing them back, yes. And then bringing them back, a couple of offers did come my way in terms of, you know, regardless of whether I can move out or not. So it's still,
so that
still
has
remains
to mean that there are rival players who are going to. That's crazy. That's why. Sorry, that was like, that's just wild to me to think about. I didn't even like, interesting. We'll have to talk after the show.
Yeah, you have to imagine, though, that, you know, a lot of players who couldn't commit to the move were thinking, right, well, I enjoy esports, I enjoy playing competitively, maybe there's another game out there for me. And at the time, a lot of people were playing Heroes of the Storm, and they were like, you know what, I could probably go pro in this. probably like do the same thing I did in Smite. It might take a couple of years for me to get to that same level, but you know, I can still do it. Obviously that didn't pan out, so they decided to come back to Smite. They started to form a roster very quickly. And I will say that, and I don't know when this goes out, by the way, in terms of, you know, this show gets broadcast.
Friday.
But, this Friday, as of recording, I am not signed on fully. I am still waiting to get a tableable offer on right there in front of me to then go, yes, I will sign, or no, I am not going to be in the SPL next season. That's really what it is. It's just this is the final offer that I will be getting. If it's something which I know I'm excited about, something which I want to go forward with, I will accept it and I will be in the SPL. If it doesn't meet my expectations, if it doesn't meet what sort of I feel like myself I am valued at, I won't be able to commit to it, and I'm gonna just not full on retire, but I'll just be taking a break, as it were. Like I'll still be open to coming back should a reasonable offer come on forward for me, but to begin with the season, it would be just, you know, I wouldn't be there.
Very interesting. I know. I hope to see you there. Season 6 is gonna be wild. I can't wait. There's a lot going on, and these teams that are being formed are between cross region and then super teams being formed. It's gonna be a wild ride, and just the fact that everything's gonna be centrally located in there in Atlanta is gonna be just interesting from that point of view. And hopefully, that means communication just between players and the company is at an all-time high, and we actually get like meaningful, impactful, like balance stuff coming from the pro scene and stuff. It'll be interesting. But we've been talking for over an hour, so I know we need to start like winding this down to wrap it up. But I don't know, anything else you got that you want to talk about, any kind of shout outs you want to give? I'll step away and kind of give you my soapbox to stand on so you can say whatever you want.
First of all, I'm no longer with them, but I still have to give a shout out to Team Rival, because throughout the two seasons that we've been with them, they've just been absolutely fantastic. They've helped us mature as players, helped us mature as people, and really stood by us even when they didn't have to. And they supported us when we felt like, you know, there wasn't really an organization out there for us during the whole Cyclone debacle. So I can't thank Ravage, Tyler, and everybody else enough for what they've done for us, and hopefully they continue to do that with the new roster that they have in the next year. Shout outs to my former teammates. I hope that they all have, you know, good luck in what they do next year. I'm calling it now that one of the squads with Rival members on it is going to win Worlds next year. If not, I'm going to fucking eat my shoe or something. Maybe that's what you get me back for next time, is to have me eat a shoe live on this show.
Yeah, maybe. No, I'm sure if you sign your way into the SPL, we'll have you on. You know, we always love talking to you, and you know, you're just a good friend of the show and of myself. So like, you're gonna be on the show again, even if you're not in the SPL.
I suppose the final shout out that I have to do is to all the fans. I'm not talking about fans of Team Rival just in general. I'm also talking about, you know, people who've actively supported me as a coach. I can't thank you enough for the support you've given me over the past 2 years. And I know that if it wasn't for you guys, I probably would have had a burnout towards the end of season 4, towards the midpoint of season 5, and I may have dropped out completely. But it's your guys' passion that kept me going. It's your guys' passion that allowed me to continue on doing what I love. And I really hope that I can continue to, you know, be there for you guys in the next season, whether it be as an SPL coach or, you know, somebody who's just doing YouTube videos. But I really can't thank you enough for standing beside me. And I'm sorry for the past 2 years that we haven't been able to, you know, give the victory that you guys really wanted, but you never know. Season 6, hopefully that happens.
Here's hoping. I know I don't speak for everybody, but it's been an absolute pleasure watch you guys grow, watch Rival as a team, watch you as a coach, and I feel like you were a part of that wave that really brought coaching to the forefront in Smite. I mean, you, Hazer, Biggie, Zeroes when he was on NRG, you know, like all of these people made an impact in making coaching what it is today. And I can say personally that you were an impact on me and my transition from, you know, esports host to now trying to be coaching and stuff like that, looking at you. So, you know, appreciative of all of that you've done for the scene. And even if you aren't, I'm sure you'll find a roster in some capacity. I'm sure this offer will come through, and I really wish the best for you. And, you know, extending my thanks as a fan of the game and everything for what you've been able to do and your impact that you've had on the game so far at that coaching level. So really excited to see what you do and where you go from here. And that's our show, everybody. If you liked it, you can follow me at the Zach Dick. You can follow Alpha Jackal at Alpha Jackal. You can find him on YouTube and his Twitch sometimes. I don't know how active you are at this point doing all of those things, but you know, you can go to his Twitter and find all of that relevant information. And so I don't know who we're going to have next week. It's kind of, you know, I'm waiting for that big drop of information to come so we can really break down all of the new orgs, rosters, and everything like that. I've got all this information that I do know, just can't talk about it yet. So we're going week to week, you know, scheduling these interviews, and hopefully, you know, Dignitas will be announcing their roster really soon, according to Biggie. So he'll have some stuff to talk about. Until then, we'll see you next time around the battleground. Goodbye, everybody.